Hello and welcome back to the FinTech Newscast for 2019. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about troubles in Ethereum Classic world, some predictions on where we're heading in for blockchain in 2019. The Germans are coming to the US with their online banking product, and Square takes on Stripe, Adyen, and the rest of the in-app processing world. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get this year started. With me this week is Monica.
Hey, John, it's good to be back.
Glad you're here. And Steve.
Hey, everyone. Happy belated New Year.
Yeah, happy belated New Year to you, too. All right, so Ethereum Classic, a great representation of the invulnerable blockchain, right, Monica?
Exactly. Ethereum's like left behind sibling, Ethereum Classic, has actually encountered what I am calling the best euphemism of 2019 so far. It's called deep reorganizations. And just so you know what that means, deep reorganizations means that over $1 million in digital coins have been spent twice.
Hey, that's the whole point of having DLT, isn't it? To avoid that.
Yeah, so it looks like some of the computers that have been supporting the Ethereum Classic network, they have somehow been induced to falsify transactions. And without getting into the particulars, this can indicate a 51% attack. That's the name that experts call these things. Of course, this isn't great for Ethereum Classic's valuation, although it really hasn't fallen perhaps as much as it should, considering this development. It has certainly created some fallout within the team that supports Ethereum Classic. So the main development team that does that, they've actually disbanded amidst a lack of funding. And certainly the news of this attack won't help. It's just another indication that there's a lot around cryptocurrencies that, you know, it ain't FDIC insured.
Well, we knew that if more than half could vote on something, they could change anything. Now, was this on purpose or were more than 51% hacked? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so the 51% attack is actually the name of the type of attack where you have these digital coins getting spent twice instead of once. So that is actually the name of the style of attack. I don't know that they know exactly how it came to be. This actually just happened a few days ago. So I am pretty sure that they're still digging into this. So there's not a real, I don't really know a whole lot other than what Bloomberg reported at this point.
Yeah. I guess part of the security is that there's so many miners, you can't get to 51% of it. But if there's some of these smaller coins where they just don't have the numbers, then it is conceivable, I guess, that you could get to 17 or 53, some reasonable number that represents 51% rather than thousands of miners at the same time.
So can I ask on that point, is this a result of the decrease we saw in transaction volume in Ethereum Classic over 2018, or is this unrelated?
I don't think that it's a given that you would have this issue just because of a decreased trading volume. But I do think that what John was just saying is probably true. You have less miners, you have less eyeballs on a smaller coin, such as Ethereum Classic. And so maybe that's a place where it feels a little easier for you to do your dastardly deeds. But Ethereum Classic does feel a little bit like, You know how you've got that friend and that friend always has the most dramatic life? Like they just have the worst luck and crazy things are always happening to them. I kind of feel like that's Ethereum Classic, you know? It's not enough that they're a cryptocurrency. No, they're a cryptocurrency that had to get forked off in another part of their birth.
The Real Housewives of Crypto Valley.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, interesting. And yeah, a reminder that security comes with some, there's some requirements to have all that security that they, that cryptocurrencies and distributed ledger technology talk about.
Yeah, and if you've got the people who had been holding it together kind of throwing up their hands because they don't have enough money to do it, then, you know, you can really see how the future landscape in the crypto world, it's not going to be many. It might be the few.
The few, yeah. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think we have thankfully gone past the era of CryptoKitties, you know, these other random useless cryptocurrencies.
Don't be knocking my crypto calico.
Crypto calico. I learned, by the way, that calico is not fertile. I didn't know that. A calico cannot reproduce, and it's not
much like an ether.
Right, an ether also can't reproduce.
It should not be spent twice.
Or a mule.
Yes, right.
Right.
Huh. I didn't know that, John. So if you have a calico cat that you know 100% to be a calico, you don't have to have it fixed.
It can't be.
You don't. I think calico is only the color. It's orange, black, and white. It's not a breed of the cat. So it could be like a Persian or a tabby or whatever. Uh-huh. It's just the color.
Oh.
You learn everything here on the FinTech Newscast.
Yeah.
A lot of nonsense online.
How's that for throwing down some crypto kitty knowledge?
Yeah, there you go.
Now let's get into the hard facts of cultural
Marxism.
Oh, let's get down to the hard facts of hype and despair.
Hype and despair, yeah. So there's an article that came out very early this year. It's one of the few, one of the first things that I read this year from the MIT Technology Review that highlighted the fact that they foresee that 2019 will be the year that DLT or blockchain, not cryptocurrency, it's just DLT or blockchain, will become boring. So, of course, we saw that over the course of 2017 and 18, there was really a lot of hype on blockchain, a lot of ups and downs, mostly downs really for the second half of the year. But we went through basically the trigger started, I would argue, in 2015, 2016 or so. Then we got to that peak of inflated expectations. And then I think we hit the bottom, you know, we hit the well of the trough of disillusionment with the massive sell-off we saw in 2018. But the author of this article argues that, you know, given all the POCs and POTs in place at major corporations, we may actually see the borification of blockchain. So
oh, that's
it will
funny.
Become
My
boring.
My mom has found blockchain boring from
from the moment I...
Well, when I read this, I thought boring is beautiful. And you know why? Because for something to be truly widely used, to be something that makes a big difference in the way that we live our lives and the way businesses run their operations, it's got to be a certain degree of boring. It's never going to have wide adoption unless it is. So here is to boring blockchain for 2019.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of reminds me of like Linux coming out and having some, you know, very fervent adherence to it. It's a wave of the future, and it has. It's you know, dispersed everywhere, but it took a lot of hype at the beginning. I'm just talking about the DLT, the blockchain part of it, not the crypto assets or coins. It's a technology that will just get filtered out into more and more products and just be the underlying. I mean, we don't go running around in the streets yelling about Linux today, but it's there. So.
Or, you know, the lights turned on. My light switch worked. I'm so excited. No.
Right. Right.
That's the reaction. And right. What a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we to kind of follow here on the Gartner hype life cycle chart, I think we may see the author here argues that in 19 we'll see the slope of enlightenment and then eventually the plateau of productivity, which means that we'll have actual live deployments of blockchain technology sometime in the next 2 years or so.
Yeah, it sounds like a Dr. Seuss has helped with some of the naming.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I thought was really interesting that they specifically point out in this article is Walmart's basically forcing their suppliers, particularly their suppliers of fresh greens, to adopt blockchain tracking technology for these goods. And of course, I think it was just this week that it was recently declared safe to eat romaine lettuce again.
Yeah.
And you know what? E. coli breakouts are the wrong kind of excitement in our world.
Yes.
So, I'm going to invest in the E. coli coin.
The E. coli coin.
You think it'll be funny if one of the first big mainstream scaled up applications of blockchain technology, if it's to track salad greens?
I mean, it makes sense. I think lettuce killed more people than ISIS in the U.S. last year.
That sounds very true.
Yeah. How many people were killed by ISIS, though? I think you can almost say that about it. Sharks killed more people than ISIS.
Probably, yes.
Are we going to start a very long list of the things that killed more Americans than
ISIS? It's ICE has killed more people
than ISIS. It's ICE, yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, too soon.
So hopefully we get to that beautiful plateau of productivity soon.
Hopefully, yeah. We can have a world full of boring deployments of blockchain technology.
I'm just ready to jump on the next thing that's on the beginning of the hype cycle so I can invest early.
I think I know. Could it possibly be quantum computing or something like that?
Quantum computing. That's almost like fission technology. It's always in the future, 20 years, right?
I don't know.
But IBM came out with their new computer.
Exactly, yeah. So I think we may be seeing sort of more hype around that whole thing, you know.
So it won't be Ethereum Classic. The only one that's getting cracked, right?
It will not be Ethereum Classic, no.
Yeah. All right, so on to the Germans.
The Germans.
To our German part of the show. They're coming. They're coming to America. Their online-only bank, N26, just received a $300 million investment, which puts them in the fintech unicorn club.
Was the investment with that dirty Saudi money or no?
No. from what I could tell, there's no dirty Saudi money related to this. But this investment gave them a $2.7 billion valuation, so they didn't quite become a decacorn, which I guess is going to become our new standard pretty soon. But still good enough to keep expanding their business. It's been very successful in 24 different markets.
Mm-hmm.
And
mostly in Europe, though, right?
I think all in Europe.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of small countries, so you can add up pretty quick.
Right.
I got Belgium. 24 markets in Northern Europe.
Right. I got the Benelux. So is this a company that was going around getting a banking license from each individual state last year? Or is that Revolut? I kind of get
Revolut. Oh, I know Revolut was working on that. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think N26, this German online bank, has done anything in the U.S. yet. So with this extra money, this is what they're planning to do in 2019. And they're going to work with a U.S. banking partner to expand here. And they don't have any branches anywhere. They are completely online and with a debit card. So they are joining other online-only banks like Revolut and
Monzo.
Monzo, yeah. There's a lot coming this way. So I think this kind of news and this kind of money coming into getting this done are going to kind of accumulate to the... There's a tipping point where it'll start to finally get painful to the large incumbent banks in the U.S. at least. I think that's already the case in the U.K. where N26 started last year already, where they're already starting to take away some of the significant, well, more than single digit revenue in some cases.
Yeah, so there's a bit of confusion about this stuff and the the market share that these companies have been able to garner in the UK. There's actually the accounts are relatively large. You know, I know that among Revolut, N26, and Monzo, they have something like 2 million accounts in the UK only. But there's a difference between having a digital bank as your secondary account and then going to like Lloyd's or whatever
mortgage
for your mortgage and having that be your primary account.
Yeah.
Whoever has your primary accounts is the bank that will be able to monetize you more than your secondary account. So people may just be using these accounts to kind of hold a small percentage of their assets or their cash rather, but using the more established players to do their more hardcore banking stuff, like bill pay and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and as I think about it, like, I know I'm a member of the olds, but I have bank accounts that are, you know, that are with organizations that are pretty much online only, or at least they started off as online only, but they got bought up by a bigger bank, so now they're the online subsidiary. But certainly where I do the bulk of my transactions and the organizations that know the most about me and make the most money off of me, they are more traditional banks. I'm excited for some of these European companies to come in. I hope that big US banks don't find some way to engage in some regulatory shenanigans to make it harder for them to do so.
What, incumbents trying to leverage the government to keep out competitors?
I don't know why I would ever think that banks would do that, but...
Well, you know, I'm kind of concerned about the branding, too, for N26. It's not exactly rolls off the tongue, and, you know, I wonder if they have different brands that they would use when they're coming into...
Yeah, but God, that really does eat up some of your kind of efficiencies of your marketing budget. And even just before we started recording this... John looked up where did N26 come from as a name, and we already have two different versions, two different origin stories.
We'll have 26 products with them. They probably don't even have 20 products, but yeah.
They have two debit cards and an interest rate.
Yeah, that might be it. Well, out of this funding round, we have China participating in giving this funding to N26 in this round. Tencent was one of the investors. The German company Allianz, the insurance company, invested. And Peter Thiel, who's always on these early...
He's always doing something.
Well,
yeah.
If you have the money to spread around, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's also one of... the investors in this company as well. So he has some pretty, N26 has some large companies backing them and working with them to succeed. So that's definitely a good sign.
And an interesting mix of old school, new school.
Right. Allianz and Peter Thiel. Although they're both German. So maybe that's maybe that's the connection there.
Yeah. And Tencent.
And Tencent. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, some weird access. Room for them to expand. So 300 million should get them. You should see some ads coming up in the next year, and we'll see how they do.
I'm sure that they'll be hiring in San Francisco.
Well, if anything, I hope it spurs the incumbents to improve their products and offerings as well.
That's always what one hopes. Yeah, but we'll see.
We'll see. All right, now on to a local hero, Square, who's trying to move into a very competitive space.
Yeah, so Square is pushing into a new place for it, but certainly not a new place for fintech. It's pushing its services into in-app payment processing. So this, of course, is something that Stripe and PayPal and Adyen have been doing for a while. And the way Square is framing this is they're really targeting this feature to very large merchants, like, you know, your Targets or your Chili's restaurant chains that have their own apps where people can order food or make purchases from within them, and they need to complete that payment processing. So they're going against that piece of the business. And when you look at the rest of Square's portfolio, you know, you're really starting to look at an organization that is kind of a one-stop shop for businesses of lots of different sizes. Square can help you with your payroll. They can obviously help you with in-person transactions, in-app transactions now. They offer small business loans, accounting practices, inventory tracking. They'll help you build your website and more. So that is a pretty powerful portfolio for a business customer shopping around.
Yeah, it's amazing how they've expanded from basically a point of sale little terminal thing where you could buy from a food truck to now this massive, you know, full service SMB giant.
Yeah, I feel like I read more about what Square is doing for small businesses even more often than I swipe my card in one of those little readers, because that's a pretty saturated space now too. Everybody's got a slightly different reader.
Everyone's got a reader, yeah, yeah.
I like those Clover readers.
Yeah, they actually are pretty cool. Yeah. So one thing about Square that I, and this is slightly off topic, but that I find annoying is that whenever I go to a merchant and I swipe my card, Square has my email address with them for some reason. And then I get emails from the merchant like, hey, come back. We'll give you a dollar really? Off or something.
Ooh, yeah. I wouldn't like that either.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. There's a brewery that or
maybe
there's
you have a setting in there that you need to.
Maybe I do, but it's or maybe it's just their space. But I go to a brewery in Oakland, and whenever I buy like a six pack or whatever, a bottle of beer, they email me a week later to say, hey, come back and we'll give you $1 off your next pint, which I appreciate. But it's also like, don't email me, man.
Yeah, and the question is, like, where would you go to change that settings? Like, it's not like you can just, like, click on over, oh, maybe you can, click on over to Square's site. So it's probably something that you opted into the very first time that you did a transaction at that beer joint, but then you just want to get your beer and go home. You don't want to deal with the cashier and have them show you how to change it. Oh, yeah, and we don't need more unsolicited emails.
We don't. There may be an unsubscribe button in the email that I haven't clicked on, but it's still a bit. I'm a little bit peeved by that.
Why which is the same. You have to? I'm tired of unsubscribing. I only want to subscribe.
Yes. Although you know who also does the same thing as Itza. Itza also, whenever you buy something, they'll email you the receipt and also ask you about your experience. Which I get it. They're sort of like a tech food company, but. Don't email me, dude.
If I get one more feedback email.
I know. I'll give this feedback.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm well past the point where I need to take, like, my email that I use, and it just needs to become a dumping ground for all kinds of vending transactions. That's effectively what my Gmail account already is.
Yeah, that's my Yahoo account right now. It's just that's what I use to buy crap.
Or not. Right? Like, you're going to buy that beer in person.
No, I know, but I mean, if I do some e-commerce buying, I typically use my Yahoo account and not my Gmail account.
Poor Yahoo.
Or Oath, rather. Isn't Yahoo Oath now? Or is that?
I refuse to call them that.
Yahoo.
Yeah, Yahoo. Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. Yeah.
It's not steve@oath.com.
Exactly.
So would you say you're an anti-Square?
No. I'm a big cheerleader. I think Square is doing amazing things. They have an ever-growing suite of services. They're becoming a bank holding company now. They're doing awesome stuff. It's just a minor thing about the merchants. So
Except for my privacy,
yeah. But from a merchant perspective, they're doing incredible things. From a consumer perspective, some stuff could be improved.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they're definitely have a lot more information when they're swiping all the businesses' transactions to make a lending decision.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's kind of opened up some capital to people who wouldn't. And let's face it, banks aren't happy to. It seems like they're always working against you for a loan.
Yeah, basically, I'm of the opinion that if there has to be a federal governmental branch to arrange loans to you, banks wouldn't do it otherwise. Hello, shout out to Small Business Administration.
Yeah. Whoop,
whoop. You know, they must be doing their job because they never end up in the news. There's never any controversy or anything. Are they still around? I never hear anything about them.
I feel like lightning is just about to strike the Small Business Administration.
All right, so before we get struck by lightning, let's head off to our final bites, where we take a look at a number and the interesting story behind it. Monica?
Yeah, so Bloomberg published a somewhat kind of a profile of Dan Schulman, the CEO of PayPal. And one of the things that's really interesting in there is PayPal has a phenomenal conversion rate. And when we use the term conversion rate here, we mean by the time a customer gets to a checkout page, does that customer make the purchase? Mm. So when PayPal is used as the kind of payment processor for sites, their conversion rate is 9%.
Whoa.
I know. And just to give you a sense of comparison, other online credit and debit card transactions, according to this Bloomberg article, that number is usually somewhere around 50%. So PayPal's conversion rate is just so far beyond kind of their competitors. And that's something that bodes really well for their payment processing business for online retailers.
Well, they'll need that help against Square, apparently.
Yeah, and Stripe and everyone else. Yeah.
So why would people tend to complete their transaction more? I mean, they see it like a friendly thing that they use all the time?
They didn't necessarily go into great detail about this in the article, but I am going to answer based on my own personal experience. So I do occasionally use kind of the PayPal checkout option, and it is invariably incredibly smooth in a way that honestly has usually typically surprised me. So let's say that you are going to buy something on Nordstrom's site. And instead of putting in your own credit card information and your address and blah, 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 you're just like, screw that. I'm going to PayPal it.
Yeah.
So you basically just indicate, you know, through a checkbox or whatever, or just click on the PayPal icon. You log into PayPal with your username and your password. And then basically it automatically converts you to PayPal's site. You confirm that that's the transaction you want to do, and it seamlessly brings you right back to Nordstrom. Now, this doesn't sound like it should be that hard, but I feel like for most websites, if I were to attempt it and they didn't have this great integration, it would be a clusterfuck. And it never has been with PayPal. And I think that that says a lot about what they're doing.
I agree. And it's also, you know, to kind of bring in my own perspective as well. Whenever I use, so you can save your credit card information on Chrome, which I use, although I'm using it less now. That's a different story. But whenever I go to a checkout page and I see that I can use a Google Chrome, the autofill, mm-hmm. I still have to put in my CVC number, which is really annoying because then I have to go to my wallet, pull the card out, flip it around, punch in the three numbers. I verify. Like it's another step in the process.
Yeah.
Al, to your point, I can just log in with my login. With my email and password, and boom, you're done because it's already in there. So it's to use a cliche term, it's a frictionless process.
Yeah,
that's a reason why they have such a high conversion rate.
I do think I need to tease you, Steve. Like, so my husband has his credit card number memorized and always lords it over me when I have to like get up and go to my wallet to get my credit card number.
Oh,
but
God.
I definitely have my CCV digits memorized because there are only three of them, Steve. So the record shows that Steve can't remember three digits.
I know them both.
I only use two cards and I still don't know. I barely know my grandmother's phone number. I'm awful at numbers.
Well, something makes sense because they're getting that high conversion. So
yeah,
maybe there's more Steves than
a lot more Steves than
Monica's in the world.
Yeah.
Too bad for the world, eh?
Yeah.
All right.
It would have been better if John had said that.
All right. Well, my final bite is bigger than yours. $207 billion, and it's a number we want to see. Get very big. It's the amount that VC funding was in 2018, $207 billion. This is worldwide, and it was up 21% in terms of dollars last year.
Over 2017,
yeah, compared to the prior year. And this also represents only a 10% higher number of deals. So the average size of deals went up last year as well. Which is something I think we've mentioned before. There's more of a winner-take-all type of attitude, maybe for a little bit less risk aversion,
mm-hmm.
and going to larger players who have been able to manage to dominate some segment or geography or part of the market, and they've been attracting the capital. So let's see what happens for 2019. It looks like a very strong year as well. And we expect to see, we're going to get more into detail on these reports as they come out on what happened last year. But it looks like the areas have kind of concentrated as well, certainly in China, in the major cities there, in San Francisco, Silicon Valley, which has attracted a lot of capital, continues to and is holding on to its share VC funding.
So it's basically more money being put in, or more money being spread around by VCs, but in fewer cities and big and fewer deals.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like titans fighting each other, trying to hang on to the next big market changes.
Mm. That's a lot of money sloshing around, and just kind of given the market's volatility in the last few weeks, and kind of, I think, just a general skittishness about what lies ahead of us. It'll be interesting to compare 2019's number eventually against this one.
Right.
Yeah, maybe 10% of that VC funding will be for wall construction in 2019. New innovative wall construction companies.
Just remember that $5 billion is just the number in his head. Estimates say it would take like $40 billion to make it happen.
My God.
Yeah. Well, experts and what comes out of the White House lately are not anywhere near the same thing these days.
Yeah, yeah.
You put that so much more delicately than I would have.
All right. Well, if you're listening, that you get a piece of the VC funding for 2019.
Right. Get some of that cash money. So my final bite is 2%, which is the APY, the annual percentage yield, that Affirm will include in its savings product. So Affirm is, of course, that online lending company where you can, you know, pay for some dental work or buy some a minor purchase online. And like seemingly every other player, they're also getting into the savings space. So we've seen that with the increase in interest rates over the past 2 quarters or so, a lot of companies, including Square, actually, and even Venmo, are now releasing sort of a debit or a checking / savings product. Affirm seems to be the latest player to do this now.
Yeah, Affirm, AFFIRM.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They're again an online lending company, and they're also getting into the savings space, which should be troubling for most banks, because it seems like every Tom, Dick, and Harry now with a fintech company can now offer either a savings, a debit, or a checking product. And because of the rising interest rates, they can make them also more compelling than what you get from your typical Main Street bank. So I know that I think that the interest rate on an account from Marcus, the Goldman Sachs thing, I think is 2.25% or so. Amex isn't far behind. And now we have people kind of crossing that 2% rate. And this, of course, harkens back to our chat we had a few weeks ago about Robinhood and their whole debacle with the account they offered with, I think, 2%.
3%.
Yeah. 3%, yeah, which would have been a
market. It sounds too good to be true.
It was too good to be true, yeah.
Yeah, well, it just, that totally reminded me, and with everybody, you know, Square getting a bank license and German companies coming into the market to offer online banking products, that, you know, it's capitalism at work. When you have a company like Wells Fargo, who's been attacked and had so much reputation risk issues, and they're still making over $20 billion a year of profit, well, that's going to attract some competition.
Yeah.
You know, that money is just getting made maybe a little bit too easily. And that's what people see is their opportunity to take a billion here, a billion there of profit for themselves.
Yeah. And you know what? If you don't have a checking account with your online bank, they can't charge you $30 for an overdraft fee.
Right. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And those fees have been a growing part of that big profit number.
Non-interest income. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. All right. With that happy news, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please email us at info@fintechnewscast if you have any questions, comments, or would like to suggest any topics. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest episodes. And thanks for listening.
Bye for now.
Thank you.